Hey, yo, it's Mo, and WTC is on the air one more time. Again, I am Mo, Mo underscore We Talk, M-O on Twitter, Mo We Talk Podcasts. And everybody, just so you all know, AVX, I'm on the side of Avengers. Brett, how about you?
Well, I think a couple of weeks ago, I probably would have said the Avengers. And today, tonight, I am going to say X-Men.
Ballsy. Keith, how about you?
I am on Team Cyclops all the way.
So is that X-Men?
That'd be the X-Men, the real X-Men.
All right,
not
we'll say it then.
Whatever that nonsense is that Wolverine is doing over on the East Coast, I'm with the real X-Men.
Excellent. Chris, how about you?
I'm following the Hulk.
So that's Avengers. What is hard about saying Avengers or X-Men, guys? Why does he have to... All right, anyways, WTC, this is episode number 29, WTC versus AVX. And, of course, we'll be talking a little bit about that, because that is one of the big topics of the week. But, as usual, we're going to kick it off with the news, the weekly news with Cub Reporter K.
Quick news break this week. We have dates for the Avengers movies that will follow Avengers, which comes out on my birthday, May the 4th. Iron Man 3, which goes into production in May, will be May 3rd of 2013. Thor, November 15 of 2013. And just announced Captain America 2, April 4th, 2014. Now, there are some questions about why not the first weekend in May. The first weekend of May has always been Marvel's time. Most of their big movies have been released that weekend. So not sure why they would go with April for Captain America. Maybe they're planning something else for May of 2014.
Memorial Day long weekend for the star-spangled hero. Why not? That works. That's what they should be doing. Is there any word on who would be Iron Man 3 director? Because I heard Jon Favreau was not attached to the project any longer.
Shane Black.
Shane Black? Okay.
And they're still vetting directors for Captain America 2. I don't believe they've announced the Thor 2 director other than it won't be Brenna.
It was funny because they hired, I think her name is Patty Jenkins, who directed Monster, and then she was out, so I don't think they have anybody now.
They've started talks with a couple TV directors, but nothing definite as of yet.
So more to come there. The Eisner Awards. The odd thing about the Eisner Awards that just got announced, I'm not going to get into who got nominated for what, other than, with the exception of Jeff Lemire, who has also been writing Sweet Tooth, the New 52 was shut out of the Eisners. There is nothing after Flashpoint nominated for an Eisner Award. As I said, with the exception of Jeff Lemire, who's been writing a couple of books, but also writes Sweet Tooth for Vertigo. DC actually had 11 nominations, but most of them for Vertigo titles.
I feel validated.
Yeah, the creators have spoken.
It was nice to see Brian Azzarello for the World of Flashpoint Batman miniseries, which was my personal favorite miniseries last year.
Nice to not see him for Wonder Woman. I hated that issue one I read.
I didn't like issue two either, so.
There you go.
BotCon, Hasbro's official convention, has announced that they are not allowing artwork to be created on site and sold by artists who have not previously worked for Hasbro in an official capacity. This is the first of what people have anticipated of a crackdown on Artist Alley. This is it's not a comic convention, but certainly there have been artists sell stuff there at this convention in the past. And some Comics Tribe news.
Excellent.
There is an Oxymoron graphic novel anthology coming.
We broke that months ago now.
Long-time listeners will remember that Tyler told us that when we had him on the show quite a few months ago now. And so this book will have a short version that will go out through the same kind of distribution channels he's used before, going directly to stores, with the full book available in October, planning for the New York Comic Con in October. And Jason, I'm going to go with Cimarella.
I was just wondering, do you know the artist, or is that who you're doing?
I was getting there. I'm not going to list them all. There are, I believe, 6 short stories, so I'm not going to list everyone, but Joseph Cimarelli, probably pronouncing that correctly, who wrote The Cape, will also be writing a story with art by Joe Mulvey.
Yes!
And Mark Fulton, who wrote Savage Hawkman, will be doing a story. John Lees will be writing a story with art by Tyler James. So, and then a couple more stories on top of that. So that comes our way in the fall.
Oh, fall can't come early enough. I'm excited for that.
And that's the news.
Excellent. Well, as usual, we have ourselves a loose format this week, but I want to just get on something that came out of that news. I just get everybody's opinion on something, because we were talking about the directors. And, of course, I know Favreau stepped down himself. I'm not sure the case is for the other directors, if they stepped down or being relieved for some reason by the production company. But what do you guys think about a director stepping down from a series such as that, which is having such success? Would you guys, do you guys understand that? Or would you agree with that? Or do you think it's better for a series to move on and, you know, so you don't have a Spider-Man case where you have an excellent movie, a not-so-good movie, and a not-so-good movie? What do you guys think on that? Keith, why don't you start?
Well, I think in the case of Iron Man, I'm okay that Favreau's moving on. I thought it was fantastic to have someone who had that much care for the character and for the franchise, the property, I should say. Now, this is a case where I don't like the word trilogy for something that's not planned as 3 movies. And that's kind of what this is. It wasn't, there's no storyline that's continuing, so it's not like you're switching someone in midstream. The movies stand alone. And in the case of Spider-Man, it was structured as a trilogy for its contracts, but there was nothing story-wise that required it aside from the Green Goblin stuff. And I think they kind of just went further than they should have. I don't think Raimi had anything else to say. And, you know, if Favreau stepped aside and he's done, then, you know, good for him to not force himself to do a third one.
Man, let me tell you, if that was me, I'd be like, how much are you going to pay me to do Iron Man 3? In. I'm in. Brett, what do you think?
That's the best argument to not do it.
No, that's the best argument to do it. Never leave something that's making a bunch of money, man. You're making money. You don't want to end up with a bunch of Cowboys versus Aliens.
But $12. We won't get Cowboys Aliens versus 2.
How often does an Iron Man come around where you can make a bunch of money? Do it, dude. Don't leave it. You look like an idiot. Well, Chris, actually, why don't you weigh in? Because you're obviously going to anyways.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, doing it for the money? Come on, don't be a whore.
Yes. Oh, man, I'm such a freaking whore.
No, he's done. It was fairly evident that in the second one, I liked the movie. I mean, he left the series in a good place. We have Joe Whedon supervising everything. So, yeah, it could be great. It's much better than him leaving the project in the hands of nobody. I wish him luck. I'm looking forward to seeing what he does next.
Brett, why don't you weigh in?
Well, I think ultimately it comes down to there's only so much that a director can do sometimes. At some point they just don't want to tell another story involving those characters. I mean, Christopher Nolan could keep telling, like, in my opinion, Christopher Nolan could keep telling Batman stories until he was, like, dead. But he doesn't want to do that. So that has to be okay. And if Favreau doesn't want to do it, then that's okay. You know, I mean, it's not about money. It's just about, like, he's got lots of offers to make money. So
it's always about money. Everything's about money. Come on.
I don't think Marvel pays all that well either.
They would have had percentage points of the film, obviously. This is a film that did really well. I will say, I think Iron Man 2 was significantly weaker than Iron Man. So maybe it is best that he's moving on. But, man, I understand if it's a Marvel saying, man, time for you to move on. I don't understand why. If nobody's forcing you out, why you would? Honestly, I would just stick with it, have fun, and make the money, and keep going.
I think there is a question of control, though. I mean, when he did Iron Man, he had a lot of control over telling that story. And there was a lot of influence when he got to Iron Man 2 of, you have to include certain characters because we have to hit the beats that lead us to Avengers. And, you know, getting into the third film, it's even going to be more than that, because you now have to bridge all of the beats between Iron Man, Thor, Captain America to get to Avengers 2, and maybe even another movie in the middle there. If Hawkeye it becomes a movie, or Ant-Man, one of the other rumors. That's a lot of things to tie together. So you're starting to limit what, you know, as a creator he can do.
Okay, how about this concept, though? How is this any different than an artist or a writer that stays on a comic book series forever? Why is it different? Why is it okay to say after two films, oh, you should move on, it shouldn't be about the money? Would you say that as well for a writer that stays on a series for 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 15 years?
Like we all said that 2 weeks ago about Mark Ruffalo.
Peter David?
Maybe someone should have said something. Peter David's another example, yeah.
But no, seriously, is it any different? And do you have a problem with it in the same way? If it's somebody in a comic book field, Brett?
I think that when it comes to the writers and stuff like that, I think especially in comic books, it's a lot harder to find that next job than it is after you've created a very successful movie. So the people who are creating the very successful movie, they've already actually made a ton of money. Whereas this guy in Marvel hasn't made, you know, that much money in that regard. So it's kind of like, well, I can write 4 comic books at the same time. Hell, if I'm Mark Gruenwald, I can probably write 8. But it's like, so you just keep going and going, and I think that's what keeps them on a comic book too long.
All right, cool. All right, guys, good discussion. Now, I'm just curious, is there any word on the other directors? For instance, on Thor, you know, I thought Branagh would have been back for sure because it was so financially and critically well-received. Any word on the reason these other directors are leaving these projects? Is it? Does anybody know if they're stepping down?
Nothing official on Branagh, but I always got the sense from everything leading into the movie that he was really doing it to play with doing a genre film and to do something besides the kind of work he was known for. It wasn't really about changing career paths or anything. It was just about playing with a different set of tools.
Okay, awesome. Awesome. Okay, guys, that's a good discussion. I don't know where. Caught you guys off guard. Everybody nails it out of the park, as usual. Let's now move on. Chris, why don't we get to what you did here next? Chris, I conducted a little interview. Why don't you tell everybody about it, and we'll throw it to her, Chris.
Alrighty. This is actually a little bit of a leftover, but it's a leftover from our last show, more like that delicious dessert that you just forgot to eat because you're too full. I sat down with a writer of an independent comic book that was suggested on Twitter, and the piece will explain the rest. Not that long ago, we did a Twitter special, and while researching the show, I was put in contact with Omar. He has a neat little comic called Xenoglyphs that looked pretty interesting. We didn't have time to get him on the show to do a full interview, the Twitter episode, but here with us today. Omar, why don't you introduce yourself and explain to us what your comic book's about.
All right. Chris, first of all, I wanted to thank you for having me on the show. It's an honor. Xenoglyphs is a creator-owned project that I've been working on for the last year with PJ Kazakutin, and he and I have been came up with this great idea that what if all natural disasters and all of the unknown and mystical properties of the world as we know it kind of could be explained, and we kind of found these 9 different stones, each with a different elemental power. Out of all of 9 of those stones, we separated them all across the world, and we made people go after them. You know, we have our main hero, Stephen James, and his best friend, Dom, who are actually separators. And what they do is they have to keep all 9 of the stones separate, because if one person got all 9 of the stones, they would achieve divinity. And for Xenoglyphs, all we tried to do was make it something that we would enjoy to read and make it something that, you know, we would have fun doing, and that's exactly what we're doing.
Is there a reason you chose sci-fi rather than regular superhero fare?
Yeah, I felt that a lot of the direction of comics nowadays was heading towards superheroes and, like, their sort of dual personality, dual identity. capes, all this stuff, and, you know, we wanted to do something more grounded in the real world, so if kids looked into it, number one, they would learn a lot about historical context, a lot about history, a lot about the world. Number two, it would be fun. It's something that's not really done a lot in comic.
Now, I gotta say, I really am digging PJ's art on this book. I've checked out your website and your Facebook page, and you've really posted some cool stuff. Now, PJ, according to his Twitter account, isn't actually in the same city you are.
No, actually, I found PJ on DeviantArt.com, and we've become great friends. You know, I love the guy. He's been working with me for a year. I was originally looking for a colorist, and I had a different penciler. And as things turned out, PJ kind of stepped up to the plate and did the whole nine. He did the inking, the penciling, the colors, and he's done a fantastic job. I could not be luckier.
Yeah, I looked at some of his stuff on DeviantArt, and he is really talented.
Yeah.
How does that working relationship work with him so far away? The Philippines, is it?
Yeah, he's in the Philippines. He lives in a city called Iligan. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, but it sucks sometimes, I gotta tell you, because there's normal business hours, and then I gotta wait up till the middle of the night to talk to him, and it's barely the morning over there, and because we're on completely different opposite ends of the earth, and sending emails back and forth, and you know we're doing so much together, so that's definitely one of the biggest challenges of Xenoglyphs is the time difference between the Philippines and here.
Now, I should be stated that you haven't found a publisher for your book yet.
No, I'm still looking. I just submitted it recently to Image, Archaea, Dark Horse, and Dynamite. And there's something in the work with Boom right now. We have an in there. And I'm also going to be resubmitting it to Dark Horse, actually, through a friend of mine who knows a producer there. So, fingers crossed.
I think you've been phenomenally successful in promoting your property. You seem to be very active on Twitter and Facebook, and can you tell us some of the things that you're doing to get the word out about your book?
I mean, it's just constant, not stop talking about it, anything you can do to get it going. So I've been doing contests. I've had this free comic book a day. So if you follow us on Twitter at Xenoglyphs, you have a chance to win a free comic book every single day from either DC or Marvel or independent, depending on whatever day it is that day, by answering a question about Xenoglyphs or about DC or Marvel or, you know, maybe even the show. So,
oh no, I really can't believe how many followers you have for a book that hasn't seen the light of day. 3,000,
yeah.
Just over 3,000. I was really quite impressed with that.
Thank you. We work hard to try to get people into it, and it's working. People are really digging
it. And you
it.
Just got the website up?
Yeah, well, we have the Facebook website up, and we have the Twitter page. That's all we have right now. We're actually working on a separate website right now, but we're working on about several other things, too. We actually have an app game in progress right now. We're developing the modeling for the characters. We're going to develop the scenery. I already wrote out the game for the most part, and we have a programmer on board who's PlasmaWorks, and we have sound developers already done, so we're working and doing everything we can.
It really sounds cool.
Thanks
for joining us on We Talk Comics. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it, and if you need anything, feel free to let me know.
Will do. We'll be posting Omar's contact information on the website. Back to the show. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for that, Chris. That was excellent. And I don't mind saying, by the way, that I've never forgotten to eat a dessert. Or never will. All right, guys, let's move on to another one. Let's say a semi-regular feature that we have. This one was created by Keith, so we'll get him to explain it. Do the first one. It's called Lost Souls.
The Lost Souls is those books that never quite got finished, never quite got published, stories that didn't quite get told, and that are unfortunately quite forgotten now. And my pick this week for Lost Souls is a book that continued to go. It continued to be published actually for quite a significant amount of time after what I'm about to talk about. But the storyline itself, the thread was gone. West Coast Avengers by John Byrne. Now, this was the first story that played with Scarlet Witch's powers being different than she had always been created as. That her hex powers, where she, you know, just made stuff magically happen. It was some kind of mutant version of magic. Byrne came up with this idea that what she was actually able to do was alter probability. And that she effectively went and sent her powers back in time to change things before they happened. And Immortus, one of the Avengers villains, got a hold of this and wanted to use the Scarlet Witch to change history. So there's a lot of time travel in the story. Byrne was going some interesting directions and unfortunately just quit on a dime. And he quit with number 57 of West Coast Avengers. There were a couple of fill-in issues. And then it was taken over by Roy Thomas to finish off in a completely different direction than it was clear Byrne was going. What's important about this story is that it does introduce a lot of understanding of Scarlet Witch's powers that is still used and was really important during things like House of M, where it expanded the way her powers worked and what she was capable of doing. Most of it is collected in trade, but as I said, it doesn't end the way Byrne intended it to. And he, on his own website, on the Byrne Robotics website, he does actually answer how he would have continued the story, which he generally makes policy not doing, but it is where he was intending to go. And probably he had two more years of storyline ahead of him when he just abruptly left the Avengers books.
The West Coast Avengers did a lot of time travel, didn't they?
It was kind of the era. I think it was a certain era of comics where they just time traveled all the time. A couple issues later when Thomas had taken over and they went back and they stopped Oswald from killing Kennedy and got rid of separate timelines, and it actually went further into time travel. But as I said, in a different direction than Byrne was going with it, and kind of wrote out a lot of the threads, wrapped it up in about an issue.
All right. Anybody, Chris, why don't you give us your lost soul?
My lost soul is Riding Shotgun. It was a Tokyo Pop book published in the manga volume format. And the fate of this one is kind of strange. Tokyo Pop in 2006, their American division decided to court American writers and artists. Now, there was only two books ever published from, as far as I could figure out, from this line to the American audience only, and one of them was Riding Shotgun. It was written by Nathan Bolin, and the art was done by Tracy Yardley, and it was a really kind of cool thing. It was about a hipster doofus hitman in a world where assassination was legalized. Our hero travels the land killing people with his extremely hot assistant, and it was just a fun ride. Unfortunately, the second issue, the writing was on the wall that Tokyo Pop was closing its American division completely. I believe for the next couple of years, they decided to run it all from Japan over here, and this book was canceled. They did get a final wrap-up volume, but the story was much too hurried. All the plot points that they had put out there in the first issue that obviously were supposed to continue for a while were just sort of thrown in there and wrapped up very, very quickly. Very unsatisfying ending, but that first volume is fun, exciting. You're introduced to a ton of cool characters, very violent, very exciting. I loved it. It's one of those books that I pick up whenever I don't know what to read. Puts a smile on my face, and that's all you really can ask out of a comic book.
Is anybody out there capable of giving me what the definition is of a hipster doofus? I've always wondered. Exactly. A definite definition of hipster doofus.
Isn't that redundant?
I think so.
If the character reminds you at all of Christian Slater in the 80s, hipster doofus.
So it's a... No. Okay. I have nothing good to say. I have nothing good to say about Christian Slater in the 80s, 90s, or ever. But hey.
I love Christian Slater's entire body of work.
Well,
I'm with Keith on this one.
Of course. Hey, you guys, I bet you guys can sit down together and watch Alone in the Dark all the time.
All gold.
What's that?
All gold.
All gold? Alone in the Dark?
With possible exception of Alone in the Dark. Actually, Alone in the Dark is good until like the last 3 minutes of the movie.
What about that one where was the FBI agent and the serial killer was killing off the FBI agents? That's blue. What about Hard Rain? That blue. And what about, anyways. Alright.
It's easy to pick the bad ones out. There's plenty of good ones. Pump up the volume.
Heathers.
It's easy to pick out the bad ones because they're the ones that exist.
Heathers. But, Breaking in, actually, I'm really loving. We're now talking We Talk Christian Slater. Thank you for joining us tonight.
I like Breaking In too.
All right. I'm going to move on to My Lost Souls next, and I got one of our podcast favorites, Keith Giffen book. This was Vexed, published in the late 90s from DC. Mark McCone, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, McCone, I believe, is the artist on it, who has a wonderfully clean, crisp style that has wonderfully evocative facial expressions. He's one of the best out there, giving you a real-world look with great facial expressions. This is maybe one of the funniest books I ever read. It lasted 6 issues. I believe it started in issue 2, or perhaps issue 3, before the sales figures had even come out, that the series itself made its first joke about a series being canceled. Like, they knew as soon as they started this wasn't going to last. It had no hope. This was the exact type of book that was not selling in the late 90s. But it was wonderful. It's about, a minor god, a god of bad luck, and who gets placed on Earth. And it's just one of the funniest, most natural books I've ever read. And it also, nothing happens. I'm not sure where it was going, but it certainly ended early, and maybe it was going to go someplace, but with nothing happening, it doesn't matter, because what happened was I laughed my ass off for 6 issues. Brett, you're a lost soul.
All right, well, I'm going to go back to the John Byrne well, and I am going to take The Last Galactus story. The story that appears at the end of, in the Epic Illustrated books. John Byrne was completely at the peak of his Fantastic Four powers with this one. Galactus in, very, very, distant future. Gonna eat the Earth finally. And just one of those stories that we were so desperate to see come to a close because it was just so well done. And then, bam, there goes Epic Illustrated and we're all, left without a story. I know that he's put up a couple of potential endings, but never truly wrapped it up. And obviously, I don't think we're ever going to see it wrap up. It would have been nice to see it come up in Fantastic Four, but definitely a lost soul. Tears will be shed.
Yeah, I dug those up after I reread all the Fantastic Fours by him, and it's such a missing chapter because it was his Fantastic Four run's one of the great superhero runs, and to not have that ending. To the whole thing.
And now, of course, for our always popular show ending segment, WeViews.
Here I come to save the day.
Saving you from bad comments.
Brett, why don't we go to you for the first WeView?
Well, I know what everybody thinks I'm going to pick, so I'm not going to pick that. I'm going to pick Fanboys vs. Zombies number 1. Now, this is a comic book where it's a bunch of people who seem to meet up at San Diego Comic-Con every year to, meet up and have fun and apparently have some sort of soap opera type life. But, and then in this case, they wind up having to face zombies. Wow, this book, one of the things actually now, because I've been to San Diego a couple of times, and one of the things about this book that I noticed was that they've done a really nice job of rendering out what the convention center looks like. They've done a really terrible job of rendering out the volume of people that are packed in the convention center, and the look of the people that exist within the convention center. I don't think I've ever seen a group of people this good looking within the entirety of San Diego Comic-Con in my life. The story is average to garbage at best. I know I've seen some good reviews for this book, but you know, like, wow. For me, there is really, I was just not into this book at all, other than the fact that I could actually look at it and say, hey, I've been there, and that was the end of it. So I don't even want to see this book on a shelf again.
Wow. Chris, what'd you think?
Actually, I'm going to create a new rating for this book. A new rating that I will give out on future podcasts, I'm sure. And that rating is Zombies on the Last Page. I'm really tired of these books. I love zombies. I love zombie comic books. I read a lot of zombie comic books. But if you're not going to introduce the zombies to the last page of the first issue, don't bother. Don't bother. I don't need that issue. I've read that issue. I don't need it. I hate it. Why do we have zombies on the last page? If you're going to have a zombie book, zombie first page. That's it.
Screw characterization. Screw setup or plot or setting. Screw any of that stuff. Go right to the zombie.
Don't bore us. Get to the chorus.
Get to the point. I'm tired of this.
It's not a one-shot special, but you want to get on for it's not a one-shot special. It's going to have zombies every issue from now on, but get to it on that first page.
Yeah, we need more. You need zombies right away. Because once the zombies enter, the whole setting changes. I don't need that other crap.
Come on. I mean, let's be honest, Mo. It's called Fanboys versus Zombies. We know they're showing up, so might as well bring them in early.
They didn't show up on the last page. They showed up the last several pages. It wasn't just finally a zombie. It showed up several pages before that.
So that's fantastic. You gotta understand this. This 28 pages of boring crap to three pages of...
I like this more and more and more as I read it. I liked it a lot. And one of the things is, this isn't a horror book. So you don't need zombies right away. This is a comedy book. It's setting up the characterizations, and then we get it. Then we get to the zombies. And their interaction with the zombies is great. I'm sorry. I really like this book. Actually, I'm not sorry. I really like this book. I think that, you know what? You have these geeky characters against zombies. I'm like, well, you got zombies. And yet now you got fanboys, and they are fanboys, and these geeky characters versus them. I'm like, this is perfect. Two things I love. Comic books and comic book characters and zombie characters. And a setting like this, it's a natural. Can't believe somebody didn't do it before. I think it was terrific.
I'd love to see them do it. Well,
I really liked it. I liked it more. I was not so sure for the first half of it. I loved it by the end.
Well, I'm disappointed that Brett told me that people at San Diego Comic-Con are not as good looking as this, because I was really getting jazzed. Did I mention I got my hotel for San Diego?
The booth babes are that hot.
I got my hotel, I got my airline ticket, I got my tickets.
Nobody cares, Keith, nobody cares.
No, that was going to be my review, if you had not interrupted me. That was, that's my review, is I'm going to San Diego Comic-Con.
You didn't like it either. I'm alone on an island here.
Oh yeah, you're on a crazy island where...
I didn't dislike it as much as the other fellows, but I won't be back to the second issue.
Oh, I will.
Tell me if you like it once you go to San Diego.
Keith. San Diego sells out in like February. I mean, they said it sold out in December. Attention to it. Clearly, Fanboys vs. Zombies is not an adequate representation of the real world.
Get the hell out of here.
The zombies in my life appear on page 2.
So one thing I will say about this was Boom Entertainment, and Boom, again, these guys, like many of these publishers, seriously need to cut back on the 400 billion alternate variant covers. Like, geez, this one had 8. Crazy. Stupid. I hate that.
Favorite part of the book.
Yeah, one of them is nice. Nine, yeah, actually. Like there's...
there were nine covers.
Nine, and one of them is nice. Brett said one of them is nice.
Yeah, I like the double page spread one. I thought that one was really good.
Yeah, I still then go with that one and cut out the other eight.
And the rest of the pages involved. That's what I'd cut out.
All right, Keith, your turn. Start.
Let's go with Danger Club from Image. Another number one. This is a book which could take place in any superhero universe. It is the day after one of the giant cosmic crossovers where all of the heroes have gone off into space, but in this universe, they all died. No one comes back, and left to protect the Earth are all the sidekicks. I loved this book. Absolutely loved it. I've read it three times in a week. I got an advanced look at it, and I read it again while I was reviewing, and then sat down and read it because it just stuck with me. I loved everything about this book. It was clever. It was a neat concept. Interesting characters. They didn't go with the kind of analogs of other characters. They came up with their own versions. Their own fresh characters, and an interesting twist at the end. Yeah, I just love this book.
All right, I'm going to say give my review on this. I'm really, really looking forward to finally reading it when I have time. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to read this one. Chris, what do you think?
Rocked hard. Love the book. The only criticism I could give it is I wanted to know more about these characters, and I'm sure that's coming. I mean, we get going at a brisk pace, to say the least, in this book. But I am interested in every character. I want to know more about this entire universe. Very exciting stuff.
Landry Q. Walker and Eric Jones on art. And then leap in there with that.
Excellent. Brett, give your review and then start off the next go-around.
All right, well, I didn't like it quite as much as Keith, but I did think it was a very good book. And, you know, it was just a pinch. And honestly, by the when the end rolled around and the ending happened, I was totally in there. I do think it's an excellent book, and I am definitely Dinosaur on this one.
Definitely Dinosaur?
You betcha.
Wow. Brett? What are we reviewing next?
Oh, let's see. What are we going to review next? Well, why don't we review... why don't we touch on the Avengers Harley Davidson issue? Now, what is this? This is the book that that appears on the Marvel website, which basically just really seems like a good excuse to put Steve Rogers and the Black Widow onto Harley Davidson motorcycles for no apparent reason in the middle of the book, and otherwise tell a rather conveniently, tidily boring Avengers story to go with it. So it's probably a good thing that they're letting you read it for free on the website, because otherwise I don't think I'd bother with it. But, you know, it's got a couple of motorcycles if you go for that kind of thing.
Chris, your thoughts?
Yeah, I hated the book. I thought it was really strange that we only really get two good motorcycle shots. I mean, that seems to be what this book is about, the motorcycles. And we only get two of those, you know, hero shot things of the motorcycles. It's also worth noting that this obviously does not take place in continuity. We have characters that I know are elsewhere at this time in the Marvel Universe acting as heroes, and they're villains in this. I won't go any further to save any spoilers because it's free and somebody might want to read this crap. I certainly didn't.
Yeah, I was disappointed with this for sure. Jeff Parker, the writer, seems to be a talented fella who just, I think Chris said it to me that he really mailed it in here. No effort at all. This is not what I need out of comic books. And this reminds me, I mean, I can't say it's the first time that I've seen a product placement type thing. And you would see this in comic books like this all the time in the late 80s and in the 80s and somewhat in the 90s. I don't need a return of it. I don't care if it's free. I'm scared to death of product placement in comic books. I'm surprised you haven't seen a lot more of it. See a Coke machine in the background. They just put it in there because they're getting paid for it. I mean, I'm surprised it isn't in there. And tell you the truth, it probably is coming someday. I don't want it. On the other hand, I can understand that the publishers need to make as much money, especially with the medium in the state that it's in and in such a transitions period, that I can see it happening and I can understand why they would do it, but I'm certainly not wanting it. And this is what this is. This is simply product placement without any effort at all, though. And it seems to be like they're introducing some Harley Davidson related characters, superheroes at the end in the final page. It's actually a nice piece of art in that final page, but I can't remember what they're called, like the Outlaw Biker Gang or something like that. I don't know what they're called. It's going to suck because this sucked. It'll suck. Sucked.
NFL Super
I
Pro.
I was expecting a Captain America to hand out Hostess Twinkies throughout the entire episode.
Yeah, at least those are ads. I'm worried about it. I'm worried about it. I'm worried about it when it starts to become like movies, where it's not even, you know, a plot point or line of dialogue. It's just there constantly in your face. I mean, nowadays you're seeing movies where they have anywhere between 100 and 200 product placement shots in them. Sometimes as many as 5 or 6 in a single shot. It's just crazy. Keith, your thoughts?
I kind of like this book. I don't follow the Avengers, so continuity things didn't bug me. It reminded me kind of just like an old, like 80s book where you could do a standalone story. It didn't have to tie into anything. You bring in some crazy villains. You have some heroes that you like writing, and you just tell a one-off story. The negatives of this, I would say, I mean, I knew going in, it's called Harley Davidson Avengers. I mean, I knew it was going to be a promotion for Harley Davidson motorcycles. What's strange is that aside from that last page with the whoever they are coming in on motorbikes, there's only 5 panels of Harley Davidson motorbikes in this issue. So whoever was in charge of this sponsorship wasn't watching what the hell was going on, because it's not a promotion for Harley Davidson at all.
They never say the words Harley Davidson once inside the book.
My second complaint is Marvel Comics, you have done a Harley Davidson tie-in book that does not include Team America. Now, this is shame. For shame.
World Police?
There's a lot sold for us.
Yeah. Ah, Team America.
I remember in the 80s, this book, they had one for the Hulk, one for Spider-Man, one for Fantastic Four. I can't remember who the other one was. But it was like this video game. Pardon me?
Quest Probe.
Quest Probe. That, remember that as a crossover? Oh, man, that was awful. I'm not talking about the comics. They were okay. Their comics was there. I'm talking the game. Terrible. Terrible.
But, man, do I ever remember wanting it. I was just desperate for it.
Text adventure.
Yeah, it was a text adventure. They were terrible. Text adventure with a little bit of terrible art attached to it. But, yeah, they were terrible. You're right, bro, Brett. They succeeded in making me want it until I tried it. Next we view... Keith.
Well, it's time for the main event. AVX, Avengers vs. X-Men, number 1, and all the related bells and whistles. We've got Avengers vs. X-Men, number 1, that came out this week and everyone read it. We have Avengers vs. X-Men, Infinite, which came with your copy of AVX if you went to the Marvel app and used your free download. It came with your AVX, number 1, if you purchased AVX, number 1, through Comixology, and it came on its own for 99 cents if you were stupid enough to not look at your AVX number 1 download first. And we have the Marvel new app, the AR app, the augmented reality, which works with the print copies of AVX number 1. So Marvel launching its 2 big digital projects. It's the Infinite book, which is using the same kind of interface that Mark Waid debuted a few weeks ago with his Luther book, and this one coincidentally written by Mark Waid, and the new app that I could not try. I've seen a video of what it was included as the extra footage, but my phone is not new enough for my comic book, which is a sentence that has never been said before in history. My phone is not new enough to read this comic book.
Actually, what about the actual book, Keith? Do you have anything to say about the actual story?
I spent about 6 hours like on and off on, you know, in my like 5 minutes of an hour Twitter during the day. And I was going back and forth with people on how you use the AR app and who's looked at it. What do you think? And then realized this afternoon, I'm like, well, I haven't actually read the book yet. I've looked at stuff. I've looked at all the extra features, but I haven't read the stupid thing. So it's almost that all these bells and whistles kind of took the focus away from, you know, the first issue of this story and what is probably going to be the biggest selling comic book of the year. Yes, I did like it. I liked the John Romita Jr. art, and I was interested in the story. I was a little surprised that the preview pages I had seen are actually from almost at the end of the book. They're about two-thirds of the way through, so there wasn't actually much storyline after the pages I had already read in the preview book from that last month. But very intrigued, very interested to see where they're going with you know, Captain America versus Cyclops is an interesting philosophical place considering what they've been doing with Cyclops the past year. So I'm definitely in. I'm on Cyclops' side though. I'm digging the book.
Okay, what about and I know you didn't have a chance to do anything but watch the video. Your thoughts on the digital comic book and the technology they're using there, as well as the AR app for that from the technology that you've been able to see.
Well, I watched a YouTube video, and we've all seen that, so we can't adequately review the AR app itself. The content on it is, as advertised, is kind of DVD extras. There is a short half animation, kind of motion comic-y thing as a prelude to give you some of the to kind of catch you up to date on what came before AVX. And then most of the rest of the content is things like pencil sketches through finished art step by step. There's a couple of interview pieces with the editor in chief of Marvel, etc. So very behind the scenes stuff rather than additional story content. The Infinite comic, however, now the interface, I still have the same problems that I have with Luther, where I find that because I haven't done enough of them, I'm still too aware of tapping the screen constantly. And if I were a guided view reader, then I would have been past this point. That's a learning curve thing more than anything else. But the story I really, really liked, it's packaged after AVX, but really it's a prequel. So, you know, I'd actually recommend reading the Infinite story before you read AVX, if you haven't yet. But yeah, I thought that the story was excellent and the art was excellent. The interface I'm still a little funky on.
Okay. I didn't like the story on Infinite nearly as much. It is just a prequel, as you say. I'm not enjoying this app. And the way this Infinite comics, just kind of their idea of this, I'm not enjoying it at all. Because it is more of a motion comic than an actual comic book. And if this is the future, then it's going to change the way comic books are, even though they say it isn't. They say it's adapting it to the new technology. It actually will be completely, they're trying too hard for me to reinvent the wheel. Comic books, they don't need to reinvent the wheel. They just need to reinforce the spokes. You know what I mean? It's like somehow this app and the way that it presents the panels, it no longer reads like a comic book in any way to me. So it isn't a comic book. I don't like it. This is not what I want digital comic books to be. I want them to simply be comic books as I've always read them, just on a digital page. Not comic books presented to me with larger panels and more splash pages and something added in on the next page to make it seem like there's motion happening instead of letting my mind understand the motion and naturally assume it. I don't like it at all. As far as the storyline concerned, nothing happens in this book. He spends the entire issue just the entire thing just going to Earth, running away from the Phoenix, and in no way explains then he crashes on Earth, and then you find out in the Avengers that it explains the actual AVX issue, explains that Nova is burnt, because that's what we're talking about, Nova is burnt, but I never actually saw him have any sort of encounter. I just saw him running away from the Phoenix, so it didn't make any sense to me that way either. I did not think it was any good. I think the Infinite is completely passable, though the art is spectacular, but it's not art presented in a way, like I say, not like a comic book anyways that I want to watch. Now, as far as the AVX is concerned, that was pretty damn good. That I definitely did enjoy. I'm on Team Avengers. I'm curious, actually, why you're picking, if you could explain to me a little more, Keith, why you're picking the other guys. But, I mean, I'm on the Avengers side. I think it's interesting that people actually would pick sides. I think that's a success for the book. I think the characterizations are good. I understand everybody's point of view. Nobody's wrong. And you know what? One problem, though, is just like the zombies, you know, the fight's on the last page. The fight should be on the first page. No, I'm just kidding. A lot of good characterization and build-up. Really, really strong issue out of the box. And a really good setup issue. Even a better setup issue than the Zero issue. But I'm looking forward to seeing where they're going next. But, Keith, why are you on the Scott Summer side?
I think I'm naturally drawn to the underdog. And in this case, it is really the way that things are put to Scott in this book. We're kind of going a bit further into spoilerage than we usually do. So if you haven't read AVX, if you're one of the two that hasn't read it, pause this, go read it, and then come back. It's the way Captain America turns up and says, don't worry your pretty little head about it. We're going to handle this. Please give us your 17-year-old friend so we can lock her in a box. That was it. Like, I was unsold, actually, until I got to that scene, and I'm like, I've picked my side.
And for me, I'm sitting there literally going, you know what? He's showing up and saying, the Avengers are not willing to put the entire Earth at risk in order to help a small percentage of the population, because that's selfish to help the small percentage instead of the entire planet and put them all at risk, which is the way I see their side and why I think they're on the right. Whereas, you know, but I understand your point of view. Now, just to go on to the AR, God, I hate this. I mean, the technology is really, really neat. It really is. It's a neat, neat idea. The technology is fantastic, but I don't care. I don't want to read books like this. I don't ever watch DVD extras anyways. I'm only interested generally in the movie. I never really go in and watch very many of the extras. I might watch a little bit on the creative of, but you know what? The film documentary, but behind the scenes or director's commentary, I'm not interested in. And if I want that stuff, I want to be able to go to their website and get that stuff, giving me the behind the scenes stuff. I don't need it in an app. I don't need it in this. I just want to read the book. I don't need something that interferes with something that has been perfect since I've been born and been reading them. I don't need that changed. I don't need something new. I just need good comic books. That's all you have to give me. This other stuff is going to interfere with and create a type of reading experience that I don't want, because it takes that much longer to have to read the book if you use this app, and it takes away the flow of the reading experience, which is what I'm there for. So you're actually not getting the storyline. You're getting a bunch of, oh, here's how the books, here's how the sketches break down. I don't give a damn. Just give me the sketch and let me read the story and enjoy the story, because that's why I read comic books. Chris, jump in with your review.
All right. I'm going to structure this in three parts. First, Avengers Infinite. Love the book. Just, I thought the way it was presented digitally really conveyed the sense of speed, which is important to this story. I'm not 100% sure another story would be as well suited to this format as this one, but really dug it, really dug the art, led nicely into Avengers AVX, number one, which is the next review, so let's just go straight there. Good storyline, gave me what I wanted, set the two teams up firmly against each other. Really good. Better than I was expecting. I'm actually full on board for this series now. I really wasn't before, but before the Zero issue, that is. And now I'm really excited. And finally, the third part of the review, app. Okay, unlike Mo, I do listen to director's commentaries on movies. I like all that extra crap. The content on this thing looks amazing. I want that contact. The content. But the app, at no point did I ever say I wanted something that made me read comic books sitting upright at a table. You won't be able to access any of this stuff if you just want to read your comic book. It's almost impossible to use a tablet and a comic book at the same time. This is not a good idea. All the reviews I found online say it's buggy. This is really quite a stupid thing, the way they're doing it with the print. That said, when they actually switch the tech to have it accessible in the digital versions, where you can just click on a panel, click on our panel to view this content, I think it's going to be awesome. In fact, I was thinking about this, and I think it could save the digital trade paperback. If we can get an absolute form later on as a trade paperback and get all these extras in a digital form, I think it could be phenomenal. But as it is now, I mean, it's just sort of a stupid idea. Keith, you wanted to ring in?
Yeah, I think you're hitting some important points on this app, and it's something that kind of rattled through my head the whole day, and I kept asking questions to people on Twitter as they were trying it in different formats. Now, Marvel's put such a push on digital comics, and I think everyone's moving into digital comics and has to, whatever breakdown of print and digital happens in the end. You have a new app, your digital innovation, the most brilliant innovation in comics technology ever, that only works with your print comic. This is not integrated with the Marvel app. It is not integrated with the Comixology version of the comic. The Comixology does not have the AR logo on it. You actually have created a digital product that does not work with your other digital products. It makes no sense to me. From a marketing point of view, it is a huge step backwards. And this content lives on a server somewhere. That means someday that server goes away. So you've got this content that maybe it's good for a year, maybe it's good for 10 years, maybe it's good for a month. You honestly have no idea how long this content sticks around.
Brett, give us your review.
All right. Well, let's see now. I'm going to start out with the Infinite Edition. Like Mo, I felt very similarly about the storyline. It was almost like it was over too fast. I did enjoy the art, but the necessity of the story was kind of lost on me. Not a bad story by any stretch, and I do really appreciate what you said there, Chris, about the fact that it worked perfectly for the motion comic style because it did have to take place so fast. But, you know, the motion comics, as I said last week, I am a huge fan of motion comics, so I don't think that ever will be a problem for me in this case, so I like seeing it. I would have just liked to have seen slightly more happen in the book. You know, I mean, I'm all for trying to push comic books forward, and, you know, my hat's off to Marvel for doing that in this case. Now, the Avengers versus, or sorry, AVX number one, I'm going to definitely say that I enjoyed the story. I thought it was a good story. But at the end, I really did want the battle sooner. Like Chris with the zombies, I just wanted it to jump right in faster. It did feel like I had read so much lead up that by the time I was actually in the book, it was just like, okay, I get it. Get to the fight.
You realize I was just joking about that.
I know you were just joking about that. I'm not. I actually wanted them to get to the fight that much sooner. But as far as John Romita Jr., I know Keith had brought that up, and me personally, I'm a little bored with his art. I don't like the look of it as much anymore. So I kind of wish he would kind of fade away. I mean, he's very competent still, but he just doesn't work for me in the same way that he did like 10 or 15 years ago. And as far as like the thing about X-Men and why I chose X-Men is almost a little bit different. It's very different from you, Keith, to a degree, because I want it more from a selfish angle. I feel like if Cyclops and the X-Men win on that side, then it, the impact that it's going to have on the Marvel Universe is actually far greater than the impact that Captain America and the Avengers winning will have on the Marvel Universe. And so I'm more interested in the impact if the X-Men win than if the Avengers win. And now I'm going to go on to the augmented reality app, and I'm not sure if the greatest thing since sliced bread is too much to say about it, but it's pretty close to the greatest thing since sliced bread for me. When I saw this thing in action, I just thought, holy crap, somebody's looking at an actual print comic book, and they're able to see things like fly off the page, and everything just comes to life. I mean, sure, there's some relatively lame stuff, you know, like seeing an editor walk around on, you know, shot on green screen in front of a book and stuff like that. Okay, maybe I don't need that all the time, but I just thought the fact that you can bring to life this comic book is just amazing. And I think that down the road, the amount of stuff that you can do is also really incredible. And I really look forward to seeing that. And to me, if you want to read the book, well, then you just read the book. I mean, sure, it happens to have the little AR in the pages, but that's not really a problem. It's like a DVD. You go ahead and watch it through once. You don't necessarily have to watch everything all in one fell swoop. I can watch the movie and then go back later when I have a table in front of me and enjoy the rest of the stuff later. It's just one of those cases where I'm less into that, and I'm just more into the idea of like, hey, you're really adding to this experience of a comic book. So total thumbs up to Marvel for that. Chris, you had something?
I just wanted to agree with you with the Romita art. It seems to me that everything he draws is sort of evolved into, well, it makes everything look like it's made out of spaghetti. It's really kind of bothering me. Has been bothering me since Kick-Ass. Just wanted to throw that out there.
You know, I've never been a huge fan of his art. Other than Man of Fear miniseries, I've never really liked it. I thought it was awesome there, but other than that, in fact, in this book, I find his art and the shape of the faces of the characters incredibly inconsistent, panel by panel. Really, really bothered me. So, I mean, hey. It's different for everybody, I guess, but I mean, for me, as far as like all this stuff, you know, if I want to watch an animated film, I'll watch an animated film. Read a comic book, I'm going to read a comic book.
But you can do both. I mean, it's the greatest thing
in
the world.
No, but if I want to watch an animated film, I'll watch an animated film, and I won't watch it on my iPad in front of while holding it a foot above something. I'll watch an animated film on my television or on my computer lying on my side. It's just.
Okay, but that's the same reason that you buy a DVD. You buy a DVD, you watch the movie. You don't watch the special features, who cares?
But it depends on a couple of things, though. I mean, there are films that I've watched where I went, I know they were trying more to create content for the DVD than they were in putting a good movie together. And because of that, the movie sucks. And so if the process time to make a comic book changes from 30 days to longer because they have to put on all this extra stuff and we start looking at longer print times, and if we start looking at them concentrating more on that other stuff than on telling good stories and the actual core of a comic book, that will bother me.
Well, sure, and it'll bother me too. But for me and the concept behind it, I love the concept, and I think that as long as they execute, I'm totally down with this.
I guess it is all about execution, but even then, it's not the way I ever want to read a comic book. But again, it comes down to, again, I'll say this, I will commend them for the effort. It is a good, I mean, try something new. I will commend that. But what about the idea that the only way you'll be reading comics 10 years from now is the way that Infinite is read, that the traditional way will not exist? Is everybody else comfortable with that? Because I'm not.
No.
I don't think it'll happen, but
it's interesting from a novelty point of view, but as I said, it's that mechanical interface you know, unless it starts reading my mind of when I'm done reading a panel, mechanical interface bugs me.
Brett, I fear it could happen. I definitely fear it could happen.
I get a big collection. I'm okay.
Yeah, there's lots of stuff to go back to. We're going to be fine.
We'll be fine. Even those, you know what? Even those, eventually you'll start to find it changed a little bit for this format. I hope not.
But I don't have to get it for that format.
Okay. That's true. All right. I think that's about it. I just want to say quickly, I read issue 50 of Hulk and this week as well. I know we're not traditionally reviewing it, but this was awesome. I don't read the Hulk. I've never read it. I've noticed how the 25 and the 50 issues, which used to be the culmination of storylines, now appear to be Marvel's jumping on point, and that makes sense to me. That's a great idea, because these are issues that people are more likely to purchase. So yeah, have it be a start of a storyline. This was really good, and I'm going to go back and I think get all of Jeff Parker's work on this. A character I never really dug, but this was awesome. And the Dan Barrettin art, as always, in the backup story, is just fantastic. And just the layout and presentation of giving you the history of the character and everything at the end, really well, extremely professional job. Just a fantastic issue. Did anybody else read it?
Yeah, I did. Loved it. The Dan Brighton backup story, probably. I actually was thinking while reading this, man, Nick Fury could show up in this, and it would be the perfect comic book. It's a story involving Thunderbolt Ross. Love the backup story. Won't go any. And the main story, really like the fact that they're focusing more on characters rather than the superhero stuff. First book with the Red Hulk that I've actually liked. So
yeah, and the stuff with the Betty Banner and everything. Yeah, the Betty Banner and the family dynamic and all this stuff was really, really well done. Really, I mean, this is a character whereas usually you just think of the Red Hulk as this hard-ass jerk. And that's how he seems to come across every book. In this book, boy, man, do they ever just so many layers to the character. Just awesome. Very, very, very well fleshed out. Anybody else have anything else to add this week as we do our plugs? Why don't you go first, Brett?
All right. So anyways, let's jump in with the usual Twitter. That's Brett_WeTalk, Brett_WeTalk, and Brett@WeTalkPodcast.com. I'm sure that eventually I'll wind up getting back onto Twitter again. I've been essentially off for a little while. But I have found the time to continue writing some reviews for Comicosity. I wrote the review for Supreme number 63 and Danger Girl Revolver number 3, and also for Chew number 25. And you know, I really do want to throw this over to Chris, because one of the reasons that I chose to review Chew was because Chris had brought it up, and I got to tell you, I loved it. It's a damn good book, and so thank you, Chris.
I don't even know why we had the rest of you guys on this podcast. People need to listen to me more. I'm Chris@WeTalkPodcast.com. Chris_WeTalk on Twitter. Check out Xenomorphs. Don't check out Xenomorphs. Check out Xenoglyphs. I'm really excited. I hope this book finds a publisher. Keith?
I am Cub Reporter K on Twitter, and you can email me at keith@wetalkpodcast.com. I'm also doing some reviews for Comicosity. I reviewed Danger Club this week. And if you check our website, wetalkpodcast.com, I have a little special photo and Photoshop project on there. I took a few panels from the first appearance of Alpha Flight, pulled out the backgrounds, and took photos around my neighborhood of those locations today. So just playing around with some Photoshop and real-world locations in a comic book.
Yeah, and you know what? I hope everybody does check out the website, because we've been working to try and make it a little better. Got some new stuff happening behind the scenes, and that you'll be able to see some more stuff is coming. So hopefully there'll just be a more fun site and better laid out and everything continuing going forward. We're going to keep working on it, and we talk wrestling and everything related to it as we move forward. And other than that, I got nothing else to say. OUT.